All right, hello everyone. Happy Monday. I feel like I've lived an entire day already, and it should be evening now. We've had a very, very busy morning. Ron is here visiting from Massachusetts, and last night I mentioned that there were some things in my life that were going to be changing, and exactly what they would look like is not sure yet. One of those things is that Ron is retiring from his job in Massachusetts on February 1. And he has decided that he doesn't feel like he's really truly ready to retire. So he's going to begin a second career. And he's talking with different companies about a position. And two or three of those companies are in Colorado Springs. So there's the possibility that he may be moving here. However, the companies that he's talking to all have locations on the northern end of Colorado Springs, which is a bit of a commute, to be making every day from Pueblo, a little more of a commute than he thinks he wants to make every day. So one of the things he's looking at is also having a commuter apartment up in Colorado Springs, where he might come home to Pueblo a couple nights a week and stay up there a few nights a week and just make it a little easier on him. So this morning, just in case it unfolds that way, we still don't even know where he'll get his job. we don't even know for sure we'll be in Colorado Springs. But since he's here, we went looking at apartments this morning in Colorado Springs. We got up very early. We left the house by 6:30 a.m. and drove to Colorado Springs and had breakfast at the Egg and I, where the last time I ate at the Egg and I was with Teddy Poppy and Vicky Poppy and Lisa Hansen. But we ate at the Egg and I, and then we went driving around looking at apartments, and then we just got home 15 minutes ago. So I've had a very busy morning running around, and I think it would be really nice if we started by chilling out a little bit. At least I need to chill out a little bit. So I have a CD. I've played a little bit from this CD with you before. It's called Mystic Sky. It's Native American flute music. And I've selected a song called Voice of the Canyon. So why don't we start by listening to a little flute music. Here we go. Thank you. That was nice. It was almost too short. I could have sat and listened to that for a while longer. We are here for 7 Steps to Awakening. We're going to continue where we left off from last night, which is 403. Oh, I just saw Lynn's question. I see Dove answered it. Did you say that Vicki and Lisa are here? And Dove answered correctly, no. And what I said was I ate at the Egg and I in Colorado Springs this morning. And the last time I ate there, I was with Ted, Vicki, and Lisa. But that was over a year ago. But of course I thought of them as I walked in because the last time I was there, I was with them. Let me give you a link to number 403 in the journal. There you are. There's a link to number 403 in the journal. And if you're listening on the radio and you want to get to number 403, you would go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the blog site, on the menu bar, you'll see step 1, 2, and 3. Click on step 2. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 403, because that's where we're going to begin today. First, I will read number 403 from the 7 Steps to Awakening. This quote is originally from the Supreme Yoga, and here's the quote. This universe has been conjured up in empty space merely by mental conditioning. It is not a reality. This universe has been conjured up in empty space, merely by mental conditioning. It is not a reality. All right, let's look at number 403 in the journal. Mind is cause, and mind experiences effect. Truth is unaffected. If truth is unaffected, can either cause or effect be real? Or are both illusory? One focused on constancy knows there is no relationship between constancy and change. And the lack of relationship itself points to constancy as true, and change, or cause and effect, as wholly illusory. One thing that's interesting about this particular journal entry is there was a time when on my spiritual path I was actually learning about cause and effect. In fact, I believe cause and effect is the name of a section in chapter 2 of A Course in Miracles. And what I learned as I was studying A Course in Miracles was I learned that the ego is the cause of the apparent universe. The ego is the cause of the world. God did not create the world, right? And what my first few years on the spiritual path were about was learning how that cause, that ego, was in my mind. And learning how everything I experience comes from me. And learning to let go of thoughts and beliefs, particularly those that caused a negative experience. So, for example, you know, the first few years were focused on noticing that my belief in my own unworthiness, Regina's unworthiness, this was the level I was at. My belief in Regina's unworthiness is what caused, for example, my anger at my daughter. You know, I got angry at my daughter when she, you know, didn't practice piano well enough or didn't practice, you know, reading or Chinese well enough, because I wanted her to be worthy. I didn't want her to be unworthy like me. That was the underlying thought behind my anger. So when she wasn't trying hard enough to be worthy, my fear that she was going to be as unworthy as me, my belief in my own unworthiness, that's what caused the anger. And you know, in the first year or so, these are the kinds of things that I was discovering. I was discovering things like belief in my own unworthiness, belief in rejection, belief in betrayal, belief in hatred, you know. All of these beliefs were driving my experience so that it was a stressful, fearful, unhappy experience. And actually, my experience has never been completely unhappy. But let's just say that the unhappiness was mixed with the happiness. It wasn't perfect happiness. So I was learning that the cause was in my mind and that I experienced the effect of what was in my mind. And those were very, very useful years, and I would never recommend that anybody skip those years or that learning. It doesn't necessarily have to take years. But number 403 is saying something different. This isn't what number 403 is saying. Because in that work that I was doing in those early years, I, Regina, was still very real. And my experience, Regina's experience, was still a very real experience, caused by thoughts that I believed. And in order for Regina to have a better experience, a more consistent happiness, a more consistent peace, these thoughts that she was believing needed to be seen and then unbelieved. But the focus was on Regina. What this is saying is that the cause and the effect are completely unreal, and neither one of them ever touches what I am. So this is shifting attention away from the belief that I'm Regina completely. The thought that I'm unworthy is a completely unreal thought. But also the anger that I experienced was completely unreal. And the I that experienced it was completely unreal. The true I, the true self, was unaffected through all of that. There was never a thought, I'm unworthy, for the true self. There was never a fear that I'm unworthy for the true self. There was never an anger caused by the projection of that belief for the true self. Therefore, the healing of the idea never needed to occur for the true self. All of this apparent healing, all of this apparent letting go of beliefs and having a more peaceful experience, this all happened to the false self. Now the question becomes, if all of that happened for the false self, why was that necessary, or even was that necessary? And I guess I'm going to have to say yes, because that's how it happened for me. That's how it was experienced for me. The realization of what I am, the observing of the constancy and the noticing of the constancy, apparently could not happen, or at least did not happen, until after enough of the faults had been cleared out that the constancy could be truly noticed. Or maybe another thing is true. Maybe it's just that there was so much attachment to the belief that I am Regina and that these are my thoughts and that this is my experience. Maybe there was so much attachment to that the idea that that's not what I am could not happen until enough seeing that I'm not all of those thoughts happened. So as I came to see that I am not unworthy, I came to see rejection is not true, betrayal is not true, hate is not true. At some point in seeing that some of what I believed to be true was not true, then I became maybe more ready to see that none of it was true, including the idea that I'm Regina. To be honest, I don't know exactly the answers. I'm not going to pretend like I do. What I do know is in my case, this was the process. This learning about cause and effect first, learning to change cause in order to have a different effect, having some success with that, and then coming to see that cause and effect are both illusory, and in fact the character they appear to happen to are illusory, and that what I am has never changed, has never been affected, has never needed healing. So number 403, mind is cause and mind experiences effect. Truth is unaffected. If truth is unaffected, can either cause or effect be real? Or are both illusory? One focused on constancy knows there is no relationship between constancy and change. And the lack of relationship itself points to constancy as true, and change, or cause and effect, as wholly illusory. All right, so we can scroll down and click on number 404. You'll find that underneath the comment and reply area. I notice Jay is quoting A Course in Miracles, where he says, healing is a reparation of sight. And then he says, only in time are cause and effect separate. In eternity, the concept has no relevance. And so that's basically, you know, that's the clarity that has come now. So there was some repairing that needed to happen before reality could come more clear in view, I suppose. Again, I don't understand this process, but I don't need to understand it. I only need to follow guidance. We don't need to understand things. Sometimes we think we do, but we don't. And maybe the one thing that happens is the further we go in this repairing process, the more we realize that we don't need to understand. It doesn't matter that we don't understand. In fact, that was another thing. I talked about Byron Katie's video last night, and I saw that I could tell from my Facebook page that some of you went and looked at it, and some of you even shared it on your pages. That's one of the things she talked about is he read a quote from early after her awakening and asked her what she thought about that quote, and she says, well, it sounds like I still thought I knew something. And she went into talking about how she knows nothing now. You know, she knows nothing. So even the little bit of thinking she knew that still was there after her awakening experience, that has now fallen away through additional inquiry. She just knows that she knows nothing. We don't need to understand anything. All right, so now we are ready for 404. I will start by reading 404 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. There is no duality. There are no bodies, and therefore there are no relationships among them. This reminds me of the very first clarity I ever shared in Pal Talk, I think. And Dove quoted it for many, many, many years. It was the clarity that Spirit had given me. Again, this was still back when I was learning about cause and effect. But this was the clarity the Spirit had given me that I do not have relationships with people. Spirit pointed out at that point that the only relationships I had were the relationships with my thoughts and my mind about people. And that those thoughts either came from ego or Holy Spirit, which ultimately meant I was only having a relationship with either ego or Holy Spirit based on what I was believing. I was never having a direct relationship with another person. And then what Spirit asked me after explaining that to me was to have a relationship only with it, only with Spirit, which means only listen to Holy Spirit's thoughts in my mind, disregard ego completely. Among the first teaching I ever did in Pal Talk back in 2005. So now we have, there is no duality. There are no bodies, and therefore there are no relationships among them. All right, let's see how this spoke to me back in April of this year, looking at number 404 in my journal. Wow, I noticed there's 31 shares on this, so apparently this spoke to other people as well. Can another person hurt me? Can another person threaten me? Can another person fulfill me? The real question is, who am I? The mind, focused on mind, believing in cause and effect, experiences change, right? The mind is the one that experiences the effect of its own cause, not a true self, the illusory self or the ego. The mind, focused on mind, believing in cause and effect, experiences change. Often the cause of change, what is experienced, is attributed to another person or an outside circumstance. And we all know this. It's his fault I'm sad or lonely or angry or happy or feeling good about myself. Right? It's what he has done or said that has led to my experience. We're all familiar with this belief.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
Oh, she's going to come up and crawl up on my lap and say hi. Yes, my love? Oh, okay. Are you scared of the sound that they're making in there? All right. She's a little scared. They're changing the batteries in the smoke detectors, and they make a little chirping sound while the battery is being removed, and that kind of scares Jamie, so that's why she came and crawled up on my lap. All right, so, in fact, there's a good example. Jamie thinks she's scared of the chirping sound.
She is scared.
Jasmine agrees. All right, the mind, focused on mind, believing in cause and effect, experiences change. Often, the cause of change is attributed to another person or an outside circumstance. However, the mind focused on truth experiences no change. So there can be no cause. Not a person, not a circumstance, and not a thought. The unlearning process may look like this, and this is what I think will be familiar to many of you. First, the belief, he is the cause of my upset, or that chirping sound is the cause of my fear. I need to crawl into my mommy's lap to feel better, right? Then, only my thoughts can cause my upset. Or in Jamie's case, of course, Jamie's a dog, so I don't know how much she's getting out of this, but in Jamie's case, only the belief that I could be hurt by something I don't understand, like a chirping sound, is the cause of my fear, right? Only that thought that I could be hurt by something I don't understand. So only my thoughts can cause my upset. And finally, I am constancy. There is no upset. Therefore, there is also no cause. Thought and world are illusory, which is recognized because they have no effect. It's funny because they're Jasmine and Ron are trying so hard to sneak around and do all of this work on the house quietly. Well, I would say, yes, Ron is trying to be quiet. Jasmine is not, and it's kind of funny to watch. So this shows the learning process that I went through that I discussed when we were doing number 403, that for me, for some reason, first there was this belief, you know, I'm a person, I'm a body, and I have emotional experiences that are very real to a very real person. And first, what's outside of me is causing my upset. The fact that, you know, Jasmine won't practice piano hard enough is causing me to be angry. Then there's the scene, oh, it's not Jasmine. It's my belief in my unworthiness and my fear and my fear that she's going to be unworthy like me. But really, it's this belief in unworthiness, that's the problem. So what needs to be let go is the belief in unworthiness. And then there was an actual letting go of that belief. And as a result, there was peace where before there had been anger and fear. You know, there was no more worry, for example, about Jasmine and the choices she's making. I'm allowed to let her be a free spirit and make her own choices in life without a fear of unworthiness, because the belief in unworthiness is gone. But after this peaceful experience, which is reflective of truth but is not yet truth, after that, then the inner teaching continued to show me that I'm not even the peaceful person who's learned to let go of the belief in unworthiness. Because you know what? That's a change. A peaceful person who has no longer believes in unworthiness is different than an angry, fearful person who did believe in unworthiness. It's a change. I hear a chirp in here. There goes Jamie. I think one of the batteries got put in backwards or something. Hear that? He doesn't like those chirps. I need my workmen to continue return to the area. They're gone now. Please come back. The battery must be backwards or something. Tell Ron he needs to come back and do this again. The battery must be backwards or something. It's chirping. And Jamie is upset because she believes that some things she can't understand will hurt her. All right. So, if I believe I'm a person, or if Jamie believes that she's a dog, a body, and that she can be hurt and there's something that she doesn't understand making noise. She becomes frightened. You heard the growling and the barking, right? You heard that?
She's shaking,
Jasmine says. Yeah, she doesn't like it. Someone says the frequency may hurt her ears. All right, it's fixed now. You know, if I have this belief, then that belief appears to be the cause of my upset. Later, when I do not have the belief, it appears that I can now be peaceful where I used to be upset. But when I start to experience the teaching that is showing me the constancy, that which was never upset, that which has never been afraid, that which has never believed in unworthiness, that which has never been angry. And as I begin to, through realization, shift more and more to that as what I am, then there's something else that happens. You realize that if you are not affected by something, here comes Jamie up in my lap again. Hello, my love. You realize if you are not affected by something, then that thing does not actually exist. Where there is no effect, there is also no cause. So as you begin to notice the real you that is not affected, you begin to see more and more what this teaching that the world is not real means. If it can never affect you no matter what, then it isn't real. You're untouched. I want to grab A Course in Miracles real quick. Hold on. All right. This is something that many of you could probably, you know, quote, not have to get up and go grab A Course in Miracles, but I'm never that great at quoting. If I quote, I don't do it perfectly. Okay, here we go. This is, of course, from the introduction, the preface to A Course in Miracles, when it talks about what A Course in Miracles says. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. That's what this number 404 says, right? If when I come to see what I am is that which is never affected, that which never changes, therefore that which is never threatened, as I really come to see that, then I also come to realize that anything that would appear to be a cause or appear to be affected, anything that changes, is wholly unreal. Only I, that which never changes, that which is constant, only I am real. Everything else, including the character, Regina, is unreal. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. So, can another person hurt me? Can another person threaten me? Can another person fulfill me? The real question is, who am I? That's the real question. Who am I, or what am I? The mind focused on mind, believing in cause and effect, experiences change. Often, the cause of change is attributed to another person or an outside circumstance, like a chirping alarm. However, the mind, focused on truth, experiences no change. Nothing in my awareness, nothing in your awareness, changed at all during the time that the chirping was happening, that Jamie was barking and jumping up on my lap and growling, and Jasmine and Ron were in and out of the room. You know, it seemed like maybe a lot of commotion, more than we experience usually during my teachings. But in our awareness, in our true self, there was no change at all. That awareness was perfectly constant. So the mind focused on truth experiences no change. So there can be no cause, not a person, not a circumstance, not a thought, right? Nothing unreal exists. The unlearning process may look like this. First, the belief, he is the cause of my upset. The commotion in the room while I'm trying to teach is the reason I'm upset now. Then, only my thoughts can cause my upset. I'm only upset if I think this commotion was not supposed to happen. If I accept the commotion is absolutely perfect, then I'm not upset. It's all a matter of my thoughts, right? That's stage two. But finally, I am constancy. There is no upset. In fact, there is no change. Therefore, there is also no cause. Nothing unreal exists. Thought and world are illusory, both. Thought and world, both cause and effect, are illusory, which is recognized because they have no effect on what I am. Nothing real can be threatened. All right, that's 404. Why don't we scroll down and click on number 405. Here's a link to 405. Thank you, Ron. Number 405 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Be not deluded. Abandon false perception and behold the truth. Be not deluded. Abandon false perception and behold the truth. Let's look at my journal and see how this communicated to me in contemplation. Suffering from illusion is not natural, and therefore it is not necessary. One caught up in the belief of illusion may say, but I see as I see, and I cannot get out. One does see as one sees, but one's seeing does not have to be believed. One's focus need not be unseen. There are means of release from that which is seen, and the means are reasonable. As a reminder, the practices that are recommended are, and these are the practices recommended in this journal, investigation, or another word for that is inquiry, as Katie would say, is this true? Contemplation, and remembrance. These are three tools that are being recommended. Investigation, contemplation, or remembrance. Now what I read from the Seven Steps to Awakening, which was originally a quote from the Supreme Yoga, said, be not deluded. And then it said, abandon false perception and behold the truth. Well, how do you abandon false perception? How do you stop being a believer, as Katie calls it? Through tools. And through, I'm going to say through faith. I talked about faith when I was teaching the NTI question and answer this month, right? That was November, yes, this month. I talked about some of the different phases that I've gone through in learning to listen to Holy Spirit, in learning to let go of beliefs that I had always believed in. And what I really emphasized was that the reason I went through these steps, the reason I followed guidance, the reason I trusted it the way I had always seen was not true, even though my experience said it was, that was all faith. I didn't have any actual proof from my own experience that these teachings were true, because my experience at that point came from my ego perceptions. So my experience actually confirmed that the world was real, that I am Regina, that, you know, that my daughter could be unworthy and unhappy if she doesn't practice piano. Because she'll grow up like me to have no talents when everybody else has talents. You know? That's what my experience taught me. So in order to let go of what my experience taught me, and in order to practice what the Holy Spirit was teaching and come to a different way of seeing, I needed faith. I needed to at least trust the Holy Spirit's teaching. And I needed that calling, that inner something, that grace that we talked about last night, that pulled me in that direction. Without faith and grace, I would not have moved through those repairing steps. I have met people who are suffering and who say they don't want to suffer. And yet, if you talk to them about the belief that they're suffering over and you try and move them in the direction of questioning whether it's true or not, like Katie does, an insistence comes up, this is true. I experience it over and over again. It's the way I'm stuck. This is my life, you know. And that excuse keeps coming back up. This addresses that excuse. This says, you don't have to suffer. Suffering's not natural, and because it's not natural, you don't have to experience it. But you do need to start practicing using tools, these spiritual practice tools. And the spiritual practice that you're giving is not unreasonable. You know, if we looked at just Byron Katie's four questions that she asks people to use to question the ideas that are causing them suffering, is it really unreasonable to use those four questions on ideas that cause you to suffer? You know, I don't remember Katie's questions perfectly. Maybe someone else does and can quote them for me, and if so, I'll read them if you type them on the board. But I get the gist of them. You know, if I have the belief that I'm unworthy because I have no talents, I didn't learn to play piano or learn to speak another language, or I'm not an artist, I can't sing, and because I have no talents, I'm unworthy. And then I have this young daughter, and she's not interested in learning to do anything like gymnastics or dance or piano or singing, and this fear comes up that she's going to be unworthy too, and she's going to hate herself too. And so I start yelling at her and pushing her, trying to get her to learn, because I'm only thinking of her best interest, right? I just don't want her to suffer like me. And then I run into somebody like Byron Katie, who helps me, first of all, to see that thought that she's going to be unworthy like me. And then Katie starts the inquiry process. Is that true? That she's going to be unworthy like you because she can't play piano? Is that true? Are you absolutely certain that's true? Right? Isn't that the next question? And then there's two more. I don't remember them. Something about turning them around. Oh, yeah, you turn it around. And then you also have the how would you feel without that thought? If you didn't have the thought that she would be unworthy if she didn't learn piano, how would you feel when she didn't want to practice? Right? All Katie is doing, all any of these spiritual practices are doing, are causing us to begin that repairing process that moves us away from believing I am the person who has to suffer because these circumstances are true. That's not true. None of that is true. That thought can be questioned. Is it true that I am the person that has to suffer because these circumstances are true? And these true circumstances require my suffering. Katie would say, is that true? You absolutely sure? That's true. You know, the rest, accept, and trust process that I learned, where I just sit with the emotions until they pass. Do nothing. Do not believe the thoughts. Just let them be. It was just another way of letting go of being a firm believer. Suffering is not natural, and therefore it is not necessary. We make it up. And if we really are tired of suffering, then there are tools, reasonable tools that are easy to practice that we can engage in to help release that attachment to our believing. Investigation or inquiry into the beliefs. That's one tool. Contemplation of wisdom teachings. Letting the teachings come within us and mean something to us. That is a tool. Remembrance, remembering our purpose. That is a tool. Yeah, Dove has said forgiveness. That is a tool. If we want to be free, why don't we start using these reasonable tools to free ourselves from our believing, to free ourselves from our seeing, to begin that repairing process? And what you're going to see in this journal is you're going to see investigation, contemplation, and remembrance emphasized. But they're not the only tools. In fact, later you're going to see awareness, watching awareness starting to come in, spending more time focused on the changeless self, the unchanging self, the constancy. Spending more time with myself and less time with the illusory beliefs and illusory character. So that being with the real me becomes natural. So that I am that. Abiding as that. Suffering from illusion is not natural, and therefore it is not necessary. One caught up in the belief of illusion may say, but I see as I see and I cannot get out. One does see as one sees, but one's seeing does not have to be believed. One's focus need not be on the seeing. I mean, those two sentences remind me of two tools. One's seeing does not have to be believed. That reminds me of Katie's work. That reminds me of Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry. Another noise. That time a doorbell. One's focus need not be on the scene. Another purpose of Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry, to move my focus from the illusory self to the real self, so that I'm focusing on the real self. That's a purpose of awareness, watching awareness, to focus on the real self. One does see as one sees, but one's seeing does not have to be believed. One's focus need not be on seeing. There are means of release from that which is seen, and the means are reasonable. As a reminder, the practices that are recommended in this journal for me are investigation, contemplation, and remembrance. And now we can go on to 406, so if you scroll down underneath comment and reply, you can click on number 406. And there's a link. I'm going to take a drink, and then we'll read from the Seven Steps to Awakening. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, the appearance of the world illusion ceases. This is number 406 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, the appearance of the world illusion ceases. Let's look at number 406 in the journal. The mind is caught in a loop. This is what I taught at Miracles in the Mountains. And I also did kind of a Facebook posting series about this after returning from Miracles in the Mountain. There were about three or four posts in a row about this. The mind is caught in a loop. This loop can be called seeing and believing. Remember from the previous quote that some people may say, but this is how I see, or this is my experience, you know? That's because of this loop, this seeing and believing loop. The mind sees, which means it thinks and perceives, and it believes what it sees, which generates more of the same seeing. Thus, the seeing-believing loop continues. The way this was first expressed to me by Holy Spirit in 2006 was, what I think about, I see, which means I perceive it. What I see, I experience. And what I experience, I think. So if I think that I am unworthy, right, I perceive myself as unworthy. If I perceive myself as unworthy, I experience the fears and the emotions that go along with that perception that I'm unworthy. And because I have these fears about my unworthy and these experiences of my unworthiness, I continue to think about that unworthiness. It's a loop. And so it seems very, very real. The mind is caught in a loop. This loop can be called seeing and believing. The mind sees, which means it thinks or perceives, and believes what it sees, which generates more of the same seeing. Thus, the seeing-believing loop continues. The loop, wound up tightly, spins quickly. It does not allow gaps or breaks in the loop. The thought, I'm unworthy, comes in so fast into the average mind that the average person never even sees the thought. They're feeling the emotions, they're reacting to it, they're acting from it, but they never even see the thought. The average person would never say to you, I have a thought that I'm unworthy, and it drives my behavior. They're unaware of it. We call this unconscious, but it's not really unconscious. It's just fast. So fast it's not seen. It's not realized. It's not noticed. The loop, wound up tightly, spins quickly. It does not allow gaps or breaks in the loop. Therefore, seeing and believing continue uninterrupted. This reinforces seeing and believing. Again, my experience continues to prove to me that everything I believe is true. This is why I said it took faith for me to even begin to practice the tools, the practices that Holy Spirit was teaching me. Because my experience, which came from the seeing-believing loop, in no way validated that Holy Spirit's teachings were correct. My experience validated what I believed to be true. Our experience always validates what we believe to be true, which is why we can keep on arguing that it's true. The seeing and believing loop is spinning quickly and uninterrupted, and it just keeps proving to us that we're right. Investigation, contemplation, and remembrance, these tools, create gaps in the seeing-believing continuum. These gaps permit the entry of light or true wisdom. True wisdom, each time it is allowed in, acts like a poking finger that interrupts the spin of a pinwheel. Eventually, the finger stops the pinwheel completely. When the spin stops, there is only stillness light. So why, for example, spend an hour or a couple hours or 3 hours or 4 hours a day in contemplation? Why do the course workbook the way it asks us to? I mean, sure, it's fun to come into ACIM Gather at a certain time every morning if I'm available and, you know, listen to somebody teach the daily workbook lesson while I'm also kind of bouncing around in looking at Facebook kind of too, and, you know, and hopping over on the web and looking up what's happening, you know, in Israel, between Israel and Gaza kind of too, and listening a little bit, and, oh, typing, chatting in the room with, you know, my friend Jay while the person is teaching the workbook. That's kind of fun. And then I walk away and I forget about the workbook lesson during the day. I know that happens here in the room. Why let go of that and move to truly doing the workbook? Truly. You know, where Jesus says, you know, do some, you know, have this, think this thought every half hour, or every 15 minutes, or every 5 minutes. Why put that kind of effort into that? Why do the workbook, just me and me? Why? Why do it that way? Because it's that is causing gaps in the seem and believing continuum. When I say that workbook lesson quietly to myself every 15 minutes, or I spend a minute meditating here, 10 minutes meditating there, I'm stepping away from my habitual seeing and believing, and I'm allowing that finger to poke that pinwheel so for at least a moment it's not spinning. And this gives the opportunity for light or wisdom or what we call Holy Spirit to come in and dawn on me, give me a realization, a true realization, not something I read and intellectually learned from A Course in Miracles, but my own true realization that is a repairing thought. I don't have to copy somebody. You know, I don't have to copy what Regina teaches, you know, when she's in here talking about her tools and how she let go of these beliefs. And I don't have to copy her. I don't have to copy Muji. I don't have to copy Adyashanti. I don't have to copy anyone. Because I'm taking enough time every day in some type of stillness contemplation that my own clarity is coming. My clarity. I'm learning from within myself. I'm seeing from within myself. I'm realizing from within myself. The practices that are most helpful for me are coming through. In effect, my own path of awakening is unveiling itself because I honestly and sincerely take time every day, just me and me, in contemplation, in meditation, in a stillness time of some sort. Now, I love to come into Pal Talk. For me, the teaching is a part of contemplation. It's like I'm speaking out loud the contemplation. But this hour and a half is a contemplation time. This hour and a half is a slowing of the spinning for me. It's the finger poking for me. The finger poking for me. It is a part of my own realization, my own clarity, my own wisdom shining through. And I'm not the only one that gets that while teaching. Some get it while writing. I also get it while writing. But I will tell you that to come into a room like Pal Talk and to listen to others kinda while playing on Facebook and while typing in the room with somebody else about something else. That's not spiritual practice. And the seeing, believing loop is spinning just as fast, just as fast. I'm not developing my own path of awakening, or I'm not allowing my own path of awakening to be unveiled by hanging out in spiritual places with spiritual people and halfway paying attention while halfway giggling at this and halfway judging that. I'm doing nothing is what I'm doing. We all need that time that's just me and me. Just me and me. In some kind of openness, receiving state, stillness, presence. It may be guided by reading. Reading slowly and allowing space between the sentences and being open for the clarity to come in. But somehow we need to allow that space so that seeing, believing loop that spins so quickly can have at least enough of a pause in it that some real light comes through and dawns on us. And without that, an awakening isn't going to happen here. We can literally spend an entire lifetime playing on the spiritual path without an awakening happening to any degree. The mind is caught in a loop. This loop can be called seeing and believing. The mind sees, it thinks and perceives, and believes what it sees, which generates more of the same seeing. Thus, the seeing-believing loop continues. This is what is called ignorance, or Eckhart Tolle calls it unconsciousness. The loop, wound up tightly, spins quickly. It does not allow gaps or breaks in the loop. Therefore, seeing and believing continue uninterrupted. This reinforces seeing and believing. Investigation, contemplation, and remembrance, and there are other tools as well, create gaps in the seeing-believing continuum. These gaps permit the entry of light or true wisdom. True wisdom, each time it is allowed in, acts like a poking finger that interrupts the spin of a pinwheel. Eventually, the finger stops the pinwheel completely. When the spin stops, there is only stillness, light. All right, let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 407. Number 407 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, caught up in his own conditioning, whatever the person sees, he thinks that to be real and gets deluded. And on account of the intensity of the conditioning and the fancy, he discards his own nature and perceives only the world illusion. So you can tell how perfectly this quote captures everything that we've been talking about today. This originally comes from the Supreme Yoga. Caught up in his own conditioning, that would be our own spinning, our own seeing, believing loop, right? Caught up in his own conditioning, whatever the person sees, he thinks that to be real and gets deluded. And on account of the intensity of the conditioning and the fancy, he discards his own nature and perceives only the world illusion. All right, let's look at 407 in the journal. The seeing-believing loop is the cause of world appearance. The seeing, believing loop is the cause of mistaken self-identification. The seeing, believing loop is the cause of all suffering. And yet, the seeing, believing loop is not real. It is the spinning of false chasing false. When the spinning stops, the entire causation loop disappears. So what we've really been talking about today is that cause and effect are not real, neither. If we look at the teaching that I was given in 2006, what I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. We can see how this is true. Let's work with the unworthiness thought. I think I'm unworthy. Because I believe in the world, I have a because in there. I'm unworthy because I have no talents. But I think I'm unworthy. I perceive myself as unworthy. You know, I go to some kind of an event, a social event, a party, and other people are talking about, you know, their accomplishments and their talents, and I'm just standing there feeling, you know, terrible. You know, I'm in school, I'm in third grade, and people are picking kids for a team, and I'm the last one picked because I can't play ball. And just over and over, all through life, you know, there's just this constant perceiving of myself as unworthy because I can't do anything. I have no talents. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. This terrible feeling. Sometimes not even wanting to go places. Not even wanting to be around other people. Because I'm such a loser. And I don't want them to see it. I'd rather not even go to the game. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. Okay, now my girlfriends are all suggesting that we go take this pottery class. Yeah, well, I tried that before, and you should see what I did on the spinning wheel. There's no way I want to take this class with them. They all create these beautiful things. You know, I'm thinking about it again. But the very first thought, I'm unworthy, was unreal. Your worth is established by God, Dove keeps typing in the room. My very first thought that I'm unworthy was unreal. Therefore, my perception that I'm unreal because I have no talents, equally unreal. My first thought that I'm unworthy is not real. Therefore, my perception that I'm unworthy because I have no talents, equally unreal. All of my thinking and worrying about other people noticing how unworthy I am because I have no talents, equally unreal. You know, it keeps going and it keeps going. It's false ideas chasing false ideas, and yet I appear to be having a very real experience. Well, what would cause this apparent very real experience to stop? Well, for that entire unreal loop to stop. If I don't have these thoughts and these perceptions chasing each other around and around and around, the whole thing disappears because it's not real. None of it's real. The seeing believing loop is the cause of world appearance. The seeing believing loop is the cause of mistaken self-identification. The seeing believing loop is the cause of all suffering, and yet the seeing believing loop is not real. It is the spinning of false chasing false. When the spinning stops, the entire causation loop disappears. It vanishes. Because it had no reality in the first place. It's like Katie says, we just need to stop being believers. We need to stop the believing. Let's scroll down and click on number 408. I number 408 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, "This entire creation is pervaded by ignorance, which sustains it." And of course, creation here is referring to the world, the universe. This entire creation is pervaded by ignorance, which sustains it. Right? The believing causes it to appear to continue. Let's look at number 408 in the journal. The seeing believing loop is ignorance and hallucination. The cause is ignorance and hallucination, and the effect is ignorance and hallucination. Since the cause leads to effect, and effect leads to additional cause, the cause is effect, and effect is cause. Here we've got cause and effect are not separate, but they're equally illusory. Just as it is with a ring of tigers, when each tiger is biting the tail of the tiger in front of him because his own tail is being bitten, cause and effect cannot be separated. This image of the ring of tigers, it comes from Little Black Sambo. Do you guys remember Little Black Sambo? When I was a young child, Little Black Sambo was my very favorite book. I loved that book. I loved that story. And of course, I think you guys know for a while in the United States, it wasn't really legal to publish Little Black Sambo. It is back now. You can get it on Amazon. And recently, I rediscovered Little Black Sambo, and I found out, are you ready for this? Maybe you guys knew this, I didn't know. Little Black Sambo was written by a British woman who lived in Tamil Nadu. Tamil Nadu is where Tiruvannamalai is. It's where Arunachala is. It's the area of India that Ramana Maharshi was from. That's where this story comes from. I thought it was kind of funny that I would have, as a child, loved my very favorite story be a story from Tamil Nadu. And then I grow up, and Tamil Nadu is the center of my spiritual path. But this is where the Ring of Tigers comes from. If you don't remember the story, Little Black Sambo, what happened in the story was Sambo was given some fine clothes. He was very poor and usually did not have fine clothes, but for some reason, I can't remember why, his parents were able to give him an outfit of fine clothes, and he was very proud of his fine clothes. But while he was walking somewhere in the jungle, we can pretend he was walking around Arunachala. He was doing his circling of Arunachala. A tiger came to him, and a tiger demanded a part of his outfit, or else he was going to eat him. And so even though Sambo was very, very proud of you know, we'll say it was his jacket in this case, he preferred to give up the jacket than to be eaten, so he gave the tiger his jacket. And he continues to, in my made-up story, walk around Arunachala. And then another tiger comes and demands maybe his pants, or he's going to eat him. Right, so he gives up his pants. And eventually, I think there were a total of five tigers that one by one took one part of his outfit. So in the end, Sambo no longer has this fine outfit that he was very proud of. But then what happens is each of the tigers become very proud of what they stole from Sambo. And then they add to that greed. And each of the tigers wants the entire outfit for himself. So the tigers begin fighting each other for the outfit. And they are chasing each other around a tree, each one biting the tail in front of him. And also his tail is being bitten, right? And they're running, they run around and around and around the tree until they turn into butter, right? Which Sambo picks up, takes home to his mom. And she makes pancakes for him and puts the butter on the pancakes. So at the end of the story, Sambo has his outfit back and he's not eaten by tigers. He gets to eat them. I loved that story as a kid. And really what it's teaching us about is pride and greed, you know, and how that's just not helpful. It's a great story. Yeah, from Tamil Nadu. But that's where this image comes from of the tigers, the image of the tigers running around the tree, each one being bitten and therefore biting the tiger in front of him, right? He feels attacked, and so he's attacking also. That's his form of defense. That's the image that came to me, but it was used differently here. It had nothing to do with that story. The image was used differently. It's about the seeing and believing loop. Remember, what I think, I am unworthy, I perceive. Right? What I perceive, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. See how that's just running around the tree? And every bit of it is ignorance and hallucination. You know, I think that I have proof that I'm unworthy because I think I told this story at Miracles in the Mountains. The earliest proof I remember that I am indeed unworthy was in kindergarten. At snack time, the teacher gave us graham crackers and milk. And when I came to, you know, remember the graham crackers, you know, like one cracker would have like six sections in it. And there's like these little perforations where you can break the graham cracker so that you have six little crackers that you can neatly stack and then eat one at a time like cookies. Well, and the other kids around me were doing that. They were breaking the crackers on the perforations and stacking them up and then eating one at a time. Well, I went to break my graham cracker and I did not break it on the line. It just broke randomly. And I don't even remember now if somebody actually said something to me, like she can't break her graham cracker, or if I just thought they were thinking that. She can't break her graham cracker. But I felt so unworthy. After that, I hated eating graham crackers in front of other kids. Even the graham cracker was a symbol of my unworthiness. Maybe after that, I don't remember, but maybe I lied to the teacher and said, I don't even like graham crackers, just give me milk. You see, my believing led to a hallucination experience, which led to more believing, which led to a hallucination experience. And then maybe in third grade, maybe, now this I'm totally making up, but maybe I had a friend who I was confessing to her I didn't like to eat graham crackers because I can't break them on the lines. And maybe my friend is a very enlightened third grader. And she says to me, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. You know, it doesn't mean anything about you that you can't break your graham cracker. But I have proof. I say, yes, it does. You know, I remember how those other kids looked at me. I hold on to that. You see, I'm still running around the tree, you know, biting a tail because my tail has been bitten. I have proof that I'm unworthy, so I'm going to continue to believe I'm unworthy. And I go on, and then I have a crush on some boy, and I send him a note in class, and I say, mark yes or no, you know, whether you like me or don't like me. And he not only marks no, but then he writes something very mean. You know, he says something like, you're too ugly to like. Now I have more proof. I have more proof. He called me mud dauber for some reason. Mud dauber. A proof I'm unworthy. You know, and then later, you know, something else happens and something else happens. And this is just the tigers running around the tree. But I'm continuing to believe. I'm continuing to perceive. I'm continuing to experience. I'm continuing to believe. I'm continuing to perceive. I'm continuing to experience. Where the heck was it going to stop? Death? That's what happened to the tigers. They turned to butter and were eaten. Am I going to let this continue until death? The seeing and believing loop is ignorance and hallucination. The cause is ignorance and hallucination. The effect is ignorance and hallucination. Since the cause leads to the effect, an effect leads to additional cause, right? The effect, I can't break my graham crackers, that was the effect of the belief, but now it leads to additional thinking that I'm unworthy. You know, the effect leads to additional cause, The cause is effect and effect is cause. I can't even separate now. I have so much proof that I'm unworthy. It doesn't even appear to be just a thought. It's evident. It is evident. I can spend the rest of my life telling you story after story after story that shows you how incredibly unworthy I am. Just as it is with a ring of tigers, when each tiger is biting the tail of the tiger in front of him because his own tail is being bitten. Cause and effect cannot be separated. Oh, Jasmine wants to tell me something. Hold on. Very sweet. What Jasmine did was she put a pretzel in her mouth and then leaned over, and Jamie very gently took the pretzel out of her mouth and ate it. But lips did not make contact. Now, for those of you who don't know, Jasmine is my daughter and Jamie is my dog. So they're playing. They're playing food games. All right. Let's see. I'm going to read what Lynn has written here. That was what I felt when I thought I heard you say that our friends were here from Boston. Immediately, I felt unworthy because you didn't call me to visit. There we go. She tells it her Eeyore mentality. Woe is me, right? Yeah, but that's it. That's it. And not only that, what if you hadn't asked? Did you just say? What if you had just believed? You know, Vicky and Lisa are over at Regina's house, and they're not calling me. They're not inviting me. I remember last week Regina said that she didn't want to teach Original Edition with me because she's going to have a house full of people. Now I realize those house full of people are out-of-town guests, my friends, and I'm being completely left out of it, right? It just, hallucination, total hallucination. Yeah, that's what 408 is all about. So let's scroll down and look at number 409. There is number 409, and here is the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Birth and childhood lead to youth. Youth leads to old age, and old age ends in death. And all these are repeatedly experienced by the ignorant. Here's another form of our chasing the tails around the tree. Not only do we have this experience, you know, of continually seeing that I'm unworthy in this lifetime, but we have another experience of continuous lifetimes. That's still a part of this seeing, believing loop. Continuous lifetimes. Birth and childhood lead to youth. Youth leads to old age. I wonder what he did with adulthood there. And old age ends in death. And all these are repeatedly experienced by the tigers running around the tree. The seeing-believing loop, which he calls the ignorant. Let's look at number 409. The appearance of time strengthens the illusory seeing and believing loop, the belief in cause and effect. Time is like the bite on the tiger's tail. It seems to be the grand cause, a cause that does not stop or go away. It is said that time comes and goes. Yet within the movement of time, time itself is sole ruler. The body and everything perceived is victim to time. Nothing, not even life, survives the passage of time. And yet, what perceives time? What watches time and makes note of its effects? Is that which watches observably affected by time? Or is time part of the observable loop of cause and effect? So again, it does seem everything ends in time. Twinkies, that's the big conversation this month. Twinkies have ended. But you know, the appearance of my friend Jack ended too in the last week. Yeah. Everything comes and goes. Nothing lasts forever. Time is the only thing that continues. Time keeps happening. People come and go. countries come and go. If you really zoom out, even worlds come and go. Time is the only thing that continues. That's the illusion. That's why time seems to be the grand cause. Time wins over everything. Lynn says she will not miss Twinkies, but she will think about Jack forever. Yeah, I posted a nice little video of Jack and Sally playing the piano on my Facebook page today, and I watched it like 5 or 6 times. I love Jack too. Everything ends, only time wins. That's the illusion. But now, are we going to believe that? Are we going to believe that time is the only thing that lasts forever? And everything else ends? That's the illusion. Are we going to believe that? Or are we going to practice one of these tools? What's happening here in number 409 is one of the tools is being used as a finger poking in this pinwheel. The tool that is being used now is inquiry. Inquiry. What perceives time? Start looking inward. What perceives time? What watches time and makes note of its effects? This is a one that I have used many times in my own inquiry. What about me was present when I was 5? That was also present when I was 12, 20, 37, now 52. So much has changed. The body has changed. My knowledge, what I've learned has changed. What I've believed has changed. But what about me has always been here while all of these other changes occurred, and yet it has never changed? What is there that really is I without any change? What watches time and makes note of its effects? When I'm aware of that which has always been here, can I say that that is observably affected by time? No, my beliefs have been affected by time and what I've learned and what I've let go. My body has definitely been affected by time, right? Emotions are even affected by time, right? When someone dies, we miss them terribly. We always say, you know, time will heal that. Time will, you know, with time, that will change. You'll feel better. But what is not affected by time? Is time really that which lasts? Or is time also a part of the observable illusion? Is time also a part of the hallucination that comes from the cause and effect loop, the seeing and believing loop? If we really, really look, we realize there is something real that does not change, something real that is not affected, something real that is beyond time. And that something real is what I am. And when I say I am, I also mean we are. Even time itself, which seems to be the only thing that outlasts everything, time itself is an observable belief. Who observes it? Who observes it? Barb just wrote, I am is beyond time. And when she wrote that, she reminded me of Jesus. I believe it was in the book of John, who said, before Abraham was, I am. That's a perfect example of what's being taught here in number 409. Before Abraham was. There's a time, right? Abraham lived, Abraham died. Then David came and Solomon came, and you know, all these people came and went and came and went and came and went. Before all of this, time happened. I am. And with that, I will end for the day. Everyone have a happy Thanksgiving, and I will see you again on Sunday night for more 7 Steps. Bye-bye.